Tuesday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day and hope you guys are having a good day out there as well. Really good show coming up. Chris Hine from the Star Tribune joins me here in just a little bit to talk Timberwolves. Big game two tonight against the Suns. Wolves won game one rather handily, as it turned out on Saturday, 120-95. Can they do it again? Can they keep that momentum going? Can they be that team and not the team that lost three times during the regular season to the Suns? That is the question Chris Hine and I will try to answer. We'll also try to figure out what exactly they did in game one to look so good, to be so competitive, and to be so complete against a team that had given them so much trouble during the regular season. Some other NBA playoff stuff at the end of the show, a thriller between the Nuggets and the Lakers that I should probably talk about for a little bit, and another Gophers men's basketball player transferring. I'll get to that right before we talk to Chris Hine. First, though, what I miss, let's start with the Twins.
Time to check my social media,
to see who loves me online.
Hashtag blessed life.
Yeah, I know an email is not technically social media, but I wanted to play that sounder. It's been a little while, and I got a great email last night, 9:09 p.m. So I'm assuming this is coming in right around the time the Twins are beating up on the White Sox, the terrible White Sox. I don't know if I've seen a worse team in a long time. They're 3-19 right now. Everybody's beating up on them. So let's just temper that. But the Twins beat them 7-0. Got a chance to feel better about themselves. Started out the year 7-13. Patrick Royce and I were fairly critical, fairly to mostly to entirely critical of the Twins on Monday's show, talking about what's gone wrong so far, who to blame, and basically saying not so much season's over, but boy, season not looking good at all right now. So got an email last night, 9:09 p.m. from Mark, said, I'm circling today, April 22nd, on my calendar. When the Twins have clinched the AL Central Division Championship this fall, I'm hoping to be able to remind you of this podcast with the hopes that you'll replay significant segments of it on the air. Oh, by the way, the subject line was, you and Royce drive me nuts. So that's great. Next line, maybe you'll be right in panicking at this early point in the season, and maybe I'm going to have to eat my words, but I don't think so. I enjoy your podcast and listen to most every episode, but your interactions with Patrick, I have to say, drive me nuts. I think Royce is a fine writer. He has captured many stories of human interest through the years. However, he is addicted to the hot take, and frankly, you are his enabler. On today's episode, once he got on a roll, you abdicated your responsibility to inject some sanity and facts into the discussion. Now, it goes on about saying the Twins minor league system isn't that bad, and some other stuff. He says, I have to say your coverage of the Vikings and Timberwolves is worth the listen. You also do a good job at the Twins beat reporters. I guess I'll just have to skip Mondays. People feel very strongly about Mondays. They either love it or they hate it. Sounds like Mark is giving it a hate listen quite often. Listen, I get carried away sometimes, but that's how I felt about the Twins too. I was not enabling anybody on Monday's show. If anything, I was leading the charge. I was the one, sending the pre-show text, like, Patrick, here's what we got to talk about today. Here's how bad I think the Twins are. Let's try to figure out who is to blame, because you just look at them, you look at the numbers, you look at how they're playing. They were just they're not a good team, and they're not anywhere close to the team they thought they were going to be coming into the season. Remember, last year, they were a playoff team. They're a team that won a playoff game, then won a playoff series, then talked about, hey, bigger and better things in 2024. Then they cut the payroll. The guys who they were counting on haven't been as good. The pitching hasn't been as good. The injuries have caught up to them, and here you go. They were 7-13 going into the White Sox game. Now, like I said, a chance to get healthy. Max Kepler comes back, has a big game, has two key hits for the Twins. That is one injury that maybe kind of flies under the radar. Max Kepler was ineffective to start the year. I had that bruise. Went on the injured list. Comes back now. Looks like he's fully healthy. Back from a rehab assignment. He is giving the offense instant help. Now you got Royce Lewis, Carlos Correa still hurt. They're kind of on a more nebulous timeline as far as when they're going to come back. Of course, they are going to help when they come back too. The question is how much and how far behind will they be already, and how good can the pitching be, even if the offense gets out of its below the Mendoza line slumber of the entire season. Now, encouraging sign, again, against the White Sox, who have now been shut out in every single series they have played. Every single series they have played, the White Sox have lost via shutout. They've not won a series opener yet this year. But Chris Paddock goes seven shutout innings, six hits, gets out of it with no runs scored. Twins get the shutout of the White Sox. Paddock gets to feel good about himself after the terrible outing the time before against Baltimore. You know, right now the Twins look like a team that is being outclassed by the very best in baseball, that is having a hard time hanging with teams that you would think are about at their level, and then now are destroying Chicago. So if they can win even 3 out of 4 in this series or sweep this series, I'm sure they'll feel a lot better about themselves. We'll start talking about them in a slightly different way. Didn't prove anything to me last night, but I will remember this email, Mark. I will remember this point in the season, the 7-13 start, this email. Feel free to circle back with me. I do appreciate, being checked every now and then. I will circle back on this if things change, or maybe if they don't. Be careful for that. Maybe if they don't too, and we'll see where we wind up at the end of the season. Brief Twins side note too, to mostly happier times, the early to mid to late even 2000s, when Ron Gardenhier was patrolling the dugout. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, who's known to get ejected a time or two, I think 35 times now in his career after getting the boot on Monday night, he was ejected for something he says he never said. He was arguing with home plate umpire Hunter Wendelstedt early in the game about a call. Hunter Wendelstedt said, "Don't say anything else." Boone didn't say anything else, he says, but a fan said something. Wendelstedt thought it was Boone. Boone gets ejected. Kind of a humorous exchange, whatever, but I'm reading the end of the AP story about it. Wendelstedt is known to have some ejections in his career. He said, "If you look up my ejections, you'll see Bobby Cox multiple times, Ron Gardenhier and I a lot," Wendelstedt said. "People don't realize that Ron Gardenhier is just a stubborn German like me, and after we might have a situation, we like to have a cold beer and talk about it." That is not my recollection of the fiery dust-ups between Ron Gardenhier and Hunter Wendelstedt back in the day, but I do appreciate that quote. I thought it was humorous and thought I would share it with you guys as well. Stop me if you've heard this story before. Gophers men's basketball player who said he was going to come back to the team after a promising season is instead now transferring, entering the portal, and it sounds like name, image, and likeness money is at the heart of it. In this case, it's Elijah Hawkins. He was second in the country in assists last year. Had said at the Big Ten tournament he'd be coming back to the Gophers. Now, instead, he'd say definitely coming back to the team. Instead, now Marcus Fuller reporting that he is leaving, going to the portal. 9 days before the portal closes. Portal closes May 1st. He is transferring again. Marcus's story says a more lucrative NIL opportunity elsewhere is believed to be the reason Hawkins decided at the last minute to leave. Sixth Gophers player to enter the portal since the end of the regular season, including Farrell Payne. That's the big one, right? Farrell Payne going, transferring out. He's going to be gone, probably getting a lot more money to go somewhere else as well. Gophers, just being decimated by this. So Hawkins and Payne are the two big ones, the two kind of cornerstone players. They've still got some good talent coming back. Don't know if Cam Christie's going to be back. You've got Dawson Garcia back, Mike Mitchell Jr., Parker Fox will be back. They've got some freshmen coming in. They've added in the portal a little bit. But man, how are you supposed to build a program when basically signing a player amounts to a 4-year contract with a series of 1-year opt-outs? That's basically what this is now. It's a 4-year contract with 1-year opt-outs because of the portal. You have a good year, you might go somewhere else because of the portal. You have a bad year, you might go somewhere else because of the portal, because you're not playing, you're not getting the playing time you want. It's just like, what are you supposed to do? You have a great year, you might go to the NBA draft. Like, how are you supposed to build any sort of program, any sort of continuity? Like Chip Scoggins and I have talked about, this is not what NIL was intended to do. It was intended to give players, you know, compensation for their play. Perfect. Yes, pay the players, give them a piece of all these billions of dollars that are out there. It was not intended to create yearly free agency in college sports, which basically is what it has created now. So Elijah Hawkins out. I don't blame him. Blame the system. They didn't get it under control, and they could have. They didn't understand what this could become. And now college sports are a complete fiasco.
It's only fitting that I bring back Chris Hine from the Star Tribune for today's show. Game two between the Wolves and Suns is Tuesday night at Target Center. Chris, game one went about as well as the Wolves and their fans could have hoped. A 25-point win, really took control of that game, kind of mid-second quarter, and then the third quarter got some more distance. Anthony Edwards was great. Everybody, you know, aside from Mike Conley not having a great shooting night, everybody else really stepped up. After going 0-3 against the Suns in the regular season, what do we make of that game?
I think the Sunday before couldn't have gone any worse, and then Saturday couldn't have gone any better. I think, honestly, we were talking about how game one, and you wrote about it, game one of this series felt like it had a little extra importance than a traditional game one might. And now just think about the way the energy is flipped from where we were a week ago. You know, when it comes to discussing the outlook of this series, what everybody's hopes for the Timberwolves are, it was a mood-altering win, I think, for the fan base as a whole. I mean, look, everybody's very emotional in the fan base, and this, especially this time of year, is prone to wild emotion swings, yourself included.
Yes.
So it's not easy. It's not hard to flip that script, but I think the way they won, how convincing they won, how well their defense played, really made a statement. And I think it's one that Phoenix has to be looking at themselves and thinking, we really have to make some huge adjustments before game two if we're going to combat what the Wolves brought on Saturday, because that looked more like the Timberwolves team we were used to seeing for most of the season. It actually reminded me of kind of the team that we saw back in like November.
Yes,
remember when they were beating like the Celtics and the Nuggets during that stretch? That's what Saturday's performance reminded me of. Like the first couple weeks of the season when we were just getting a feel for how good the Timberwolves are. Their defense played like that back then. And that's what that reminded me of. It was very much a vintage performance. And I think just the most encouraging sign you could possibly have for the Wolves coming into this series. Now, it's one game. Game two, you know, this is when I feel like series really begin, is after the feeling out process of game one. What adjustments does the other team make in game two? And then you kind of settle into the rhythm of a series. So we have to wait and see how Phoenix decides it's going to try to punch back. And do the Wolves have a counter, or will their moves fail? We'll see.
Yeah, the point you just made about how it reminded you of the way they were playing earlier in the season. I said the same thing with Royce on Monday's show. Just I didn't feel like they had been playing consistently great for a while. Like, I felt like the regular season had been a bit of a slog, and then they had the Towns injury, and then they tried to get him back late in the year, and those games didn't look great. Like, they certainly were winning games, but it was taking a lot of effort even to beat okay to bad teams in some cases, and they weren't stacking up and a lot of signature wins, at least. I mean, they still had their moments, of course. It wasn't like they were playing poorly, but it felt more like they were playing at the beginning of the season, for sure. And, you know, maybe a week to prepare, fresher legs, things like that played a role. Like, I'm sure everybody's just tired at this point in the season.
I think so. I think that the rest did them some good. And listen, when you get to April on the calendar like that, the end is in sight. The playoffs are in sight. I feel like it's human nature a little bit for you to kind of coast to the end. Like, yeah, I know they were fighting for the one seed, but I really do feel like that sometimes. And especially when you're playing like back to backs and all that stuff. So I think it's just a little bit of rejuvenated energy, whatever you want. Like the playoffs just provide that extra burst of emotion or motivation that you quite frankly can't really generate when it's just the regular season and you're trying to just kind of summon the energy to get through a week where you have three games or four nights or something like that. You know, now the Wolves are home for a whole week. They got to really dig into a game plan, get motivated to beat an opponent like Phoenix. You know, I do think the regular season failures against them probably made them a little more sharp and focused in practice. I think that this team can use that sometimes. Just that little extra kick to really mind the game plan, be focused, you know, kind of figure out what was going on in those other losses and come up with a solution for it. I will say, you know, the one thing that has me concerned is like the starting five still hasn't seemed quite in sync. I mean, you know, Nikhil and Nas, you know, and the energy they brought really switched up the game and won the game for them on Saturday. So the starting unit still seems a little clunky to me, especially on the offensive end when it's those five guys out there on the floor together.
Yeah, and you wrote about that, just kind of how they were, I think, what, a minus eight when those five were together on the floor. But they certainly have more depth than Phoenix, and we'll see what Grayson Allen's status is for game two after he was hurt an ankle in game one. That would put another hit to their depth. But you mentioned Nikhil Alexander-Walker. I thought, obviously, he was a huge part of this game, not just, you know, being able to sub in and even play essentially some point guard when Conley was out, but being able to give them an extra, you know, slightly bigger body for switching when it's, you know, trying to defend, you know, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant. It's harder to do that when you've got Mike Conley out there. He's a good defensive player. He's a good team defensive player, but one-on-one, he's vulnerable. He's smaller. He's older. Alexander Walker being able to defend in that role and hit a bunch of big shots. Like he was the biggest player in the game in my mind.
Yeah. When he came in, it was a different game on Saturday. And, you know, it's a testament to who he's been for them all season, played in all 82 games. And yeah, I think just his physicality is on the defensive end of the floor is something they're going to need in this series and a large dose of. So I'd expect him to continue to play major minutes like that. He was excellent. And, you know, honestly, like he can guard Devin Booker. That could shift. That shifts matchups around. If he's sharing the floor with Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels, McDaniels can guard Durant, and Edwards could guard Beal. And, you know, I think that's, if you had to kind of plot out how the Wolves were going to defend those three guys, those would be the three guys I would want on each of them. I'd want McDaniels on Durant, Alexander Walker on Booker, and Ant on Beal. You know, we'll see if Grayson Allen plays and how that affects Phoenix's rotations and how the Wolves will match up against that. You know, kind of if they go Royce O'Neal out there as their fifth starter, if Grayson Allen can't go. But yeah, I think Nikhil Alexander-Walker has to play 25 to 30 minutes a night the rest of the series here because they need his energy. They need to make life as difficult on Devin Booker as possible, and he can help with that. When you throw McDaniels on him for some length of time and then you switch McDaniels off of him or arrest Jaden, and in comes Nikhil to just keep it up and keep up that kind of same energy defending Devin Booker around screens, because that to me, listen, KD can shoot all the mid-range jumpers he wants, I feel like, in this series, and the Wolves aren't going to really bother trying to shutting that down too much. But Devin Booker slicing them up from the free throw line or from three-point range, I don't think they want that. I think they would rather try to shut that down than to try to shut KD down from 15 feet. You have to pick your poison somewhere. I guess the team is talented as this, and I think that's where the Wolves are picking their poison in this series. They do not want Devin Booker and Bradley Beal to dice them up getting to the rim or from three-point range. They would rather KD just do his thing in isolation in the mid-range.
What did the Wolves do so differently then in winning by 25? And then I guess the follow-up to that is then what adjustments do you imagine Phoenix tries to make in order to get back to the things that were successful for them, or find some success in this series?
Well, you know, I think the Wolves made the one big adjustment that they really needed to make, which was to limit turnovers, because Phoenix really capitalized in the regular season when the Wolves would screw up on offense.
Okay.
So I think limiting the turnovers, they only had 4 first quarter turnovers as opposed to 11 in the regular season finale. On all 4 were from Ant. Nobody else turned the ball over in the first quarter on Saturday except for Ant. So cleaning up the turnovers is one. So if you're Phoenix, you have to be sitting there thinking, okay, well, if we can't generate turnovers or they're not turning the ball over, what are we going to do? Because you can't be so dependent. It's not like Phoenix is a great defensive team that is that forces a ton of turnovers all season. That hasn't been the case. So really, that's all in the Wolves' control, how they choose to play offense and how well they play offense. So if you're Phoenix, you have to come up with a way to generate your offense when it's not coming in transition. You have to find a way to attack the Wolves in the half court better. And that's where the Wolves shine. And that's where they are, you know, the best team in the NBA when they're able to defend somebody in the half court. So Phoenix has to find a way schematically or matchup wise to figure out how to attack the Wolves in the half court. Because if the Wolves have another game like Saturday where they're not committing as many turnovers as they were in the regular season, Phoenix has to find a way to generate these kind of looks. The only time Phoenix ever made runs in that game was when the Wolves were sloppy on offense. Think of that early third quarter. The Wolves committed a couple turnovers. Phoenix got out in transition. Bradley Beal gets loose for a 3. Like that's how Phoenix wants to play for 48 minutes. And if the Wolves can just limit those instances, they have the upper hand in the series, I think. It's all on how the Wolves handle the game, I feel like. And, you know, if they mess it up on offense, if they're sloppy, if they're, you know, if Ant is going into a crowd and trying to pass through 4 defenders, like that's a recipe for disaster. But if they're careful with the ball, if they're moving it smartly and taking open shots when they're there and not trying to get the perfect shot,
yeah,
I feel like that's you know, that's the formula they need to have. It's kind of like, it kind of reminded me of covering hockey playoffs.
Yeah.
When Mike Conley and I think one or two others during practice last week were talking about how we just need to get shots at the rim. And it reminded me of how in the hockey playoffs, you always hear guys say, we just got to get pucks on the net.
Got to get to the net.
We can't get the perfect shot. We just got to get pucks on the net. Right.
Yeah.
And I think for the Wolves, that's kind of the thing. It's like, well, you just got to get shots up. Decent, take the decent look and try to get the perfect look. And that's what their philosophy. Because even if they miss, they stand a good chance of getting the offensive rebound. They were fantastic on the offensive glass. Rudy Gobert and even others, fantastic rebounding effort in game one. And B, it helps their defense when Phoenix isn't able to just get out and transition after a steal. So, you know, that's the formula. The Wolves, that their defense starts on offense. I said that before game one, and I maintain that after game one as well.
Seemed like a reasonably well officiated game. I didn't see a lot of like griping one way or the other necessarily. That said, if the Wolves get into a more tightly officiated game, I feel like one thing Phoenix might want to try to do is obviously get to the foul line more. Booker, all their key guys are excellent free throw shooters. They, you know, they are veterans that can get whistles, can get to the line. Do you think that might be a strategy for Phoenix to try to get balls to the rim, get the ball to the basket, as they say?
I think you saw it in the second half when Devin Booker started having a little bit of success baiting the refs into fouls. He would basically bump into Nikhil. I remember it was Nikhil one possession, and then it was Naz Reid another one, where he just goes flying into them, makes an exaggerated movement, bouncing off of them, and gets the foul call. I would expect Devin Booker to be more baiting with the officials in game two to try to get himself to the line and get some of the Wolves in foul trouble. Outside of that, you know, I just we'll see how he wants to navigate screens. One of the things about Jaden and Nikhil that's so good is they navigate screens so well, And even if they're, you know, especially with Jaden in his length, even if he's kind of behind you coming off of a screen, he could still use his length to kind of side contest or rear view contest a shot and still make it difficult on you. Nikhil's just the best at getting through screens, you know, just straight up using kind of his, you know, the shape of his body to just kind of slither through a screen, and whatever small space might be there for him to get through, he gets through. You know, so I'll be curious to see just kind of how Phoenix wants to get Devin Booker going, because to me that feels like priority number one for them is making sure your Olympian and all-star and potential all-NBA player, you know, starts getting back to 25, 30 a night.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Yeah, those are all good points. How, a couple more things for you, Chris. I mean, I think it's only natural to feel a lot different about the series after just one game. How much different should we feel, and how much stock do we put in that one game versus kind of some of what we saw during the regular season?
If I could use a term, I would say cautious optimism
Okay.
headed into game two. Do not go overboard thinking that this series is over,
Right.
that the Wolves solved all their issues in game one, and Phoenix is not going to come back with some sort of adjustments, some sort of lineups that they could use. Just cautious optimism. The Wolves, you know, 2 years ago blew Memphis out in game one of that series
Yeah.
too, and look what happened the rest of the series. So just cautious optimism. We've seen this before, and I think the Wolves are better equipped now than they were 2 years ago,
Yeah.
those that are still on the team, to handle the ups and downs and the peaks and valleys of a series. So it was very encouraging. It was very encouraging on Saturday, because I felt like they dictated everything that they wanted to do in a way that we hadn't seen against the Suns all season, and they got back to it. But it's seven games for a reason, and Phoenix has to be thinking that too. And if Phoenix somehow wins game two and it's 1-1 going into Phoenix in game three, everybody's going to feel a lot differently than they're feeling right now. So it's just cautious optimism. That's all.
I don't think you'd find any Wolves fans that think it's over after that. But yeah, it's just it's funny. Like, the conversation we're having right now is completely different than the one we had 3 or 4 days ago. And it's because I didn't know they had this game in them against the Suns. And a part of that is just obviously how the regular season played out. And part of it was that they haven't won a playoff series in 20 years. And so I think as expectations grow, as they get confidence in this series, it will be interesting to see kind of how that plays out. Will that embolden them to keep playing better? Will it kind of cause them to ease up or tighten up? I don't sense that's the makeup of this team, but I guess, you know, we're finding out along the way what they're exactly made of here.
We are, and you know, I will say I thought the atmosphere Saturday was the best I think I've seen, because with Target Center crowds, you sometimes get the really good and the bad at the same time. Because yes, you get a lot of energy when things are going well, but you also get a lot of anxiety and tension when things aren't going
Sure.
well. I didn't sense that. Even when Phoenix was kind of making runs at the Wolves in the third quarter, they cut it to four, or they'd hit a couple buckets to get, you know, the lead down to, I don't know, 12 or 13 or whatever. And in years past, and like, you know, even regular season games last year, the crowd, you could feel the tension and the, you know, the dissatisfaction in the arena at times. You did not feel that on Saturday. It seemed to be just all positive, all energy, all uplifting, to me at least, from my vantage point. And you know, having spoken to, you know, the team about that, they can feel that. You know, they can feel that energy in the building when it turns negative, and they feel it when it's positive. So, you know, that would be just maybe my encouragement to, you know, to fans. If you want to contribute to the game in some way, your energy is noticed by the
Yeah.
team. So, you know, that's kind of how the home crowd could contribute to this, and provide them with the good vibes that they can keep on the floor. Whereas in previous years, those vibes turned sour, like in that series against Memphis, for instance.
Oh, I remember that. I remember I was at game six of that series, and it just, when they blew that, when it was just one more lead that was being blown, was it game six or game five? I can't remember which one. Maybe it was five.
Game six, yeah.
It was game six, yeah, because six was back at Target Center.
Mm-hmm.
It just got so quiet in there as Memphis was making yet another lead to slice up that, you know, to slice into that another double digit lead. And it does, that does make a difference. You know, final thing, it feels like, obviously, Phoenix can play better and shoot better. Obviously, the Wolves can play worse and shoot worse. But I guess the one thing that feels particularly encouraging is that it didn't feel like a game where it was just like, well, the Wolves shot the lights out and you're never going to be able to replicate that again. They shot the ball well, 50% from the field, 37% from three-point range. But those are like achievable numbers again. And even Phoenix, you know, Phoenix can be better and probably will be better than 9 of 28 from three. But that's not like, they didn't go like 4 for 30. Like it didn't feel like it was just a complete outlier game in terms of shooting. It felt like one team was certainly a little hotter and one team was a little colder than usual. It didn't feel like it was just this throw it all out because they just shot the lights out and we'll go change it up in game two.
Yeah, I think that's what's encouraging too, is because we've seen the Wolves win like that a lot during the season. Like you said, it was not just a case of hot shooting. And I think, you know, Phoenix's numbers, you know, they could improve a little bit, but honestly, you have to look at the way they were getting their threes. Like I said, when they are able to just get open looks and spot up and transition coming off of turnovers, those are different quality of three-point looks than in the half court when the Wolves maybe are able to get a hand in their face or something like that. I feel like the quality of shots that Phoenix was generating on Saturday paled in comparison to the quality of shots they were getting, especially in that regular season finale against the Wolves. So I do think that some of Phoenix's shooting numbers on Saturday is just tied into how the Wolves are playing defense. And you have to give them credit for that.
Well, we'll see what happens in game two Tuesday night. Chris Hine will be covering it. We'll be talking about it, of course, always on the show. Chris, appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Mike.
Great stuff from Chris Hine. As always, appreciate him coming on. I know it's a busy time for him, busy time for everybody associated with the Timberwolves. Like we said, game two tonight. I'm expecting a much closer game tonight. You know, like we said, it's just the way the Wolves won feels sustainable. Also feels like they're going to get a much better effort, much better output from Phoenix in this game. It could be a tight game. It could be the kind of game where someone needs to make a shot, kind of like Jamal Murray did for Denver last night. Beat the Lakers with a step back, you know, 15-foot mid-ranger right at the buzzer, 101-99. Nuggets up 2-0 on the Lakers now. LeBron's not happy about the officiating. The Lakers are in a 2-0 hole going back to L.A. Nuggets looking like the, you know, looking everything the part, like the champs, the defending champs they are. It was a tremendous game. These playoffs, man, they are going to be a lot of fun, especially in the West. Looking forward to seeing how far the Wolves can take it again. Tonight's huge. You know, game one was huge. They played great. Can they do it again? Can they replicate? It's all about, you know, momentum is one game at a time in the playoffs. Can the Wolves do it again? We will see tonight. That'll do it for me today. Andrew Kramer expected to join me on Wednesday's show to talk NFL draft. Didn't even talk any NFL draft. We're 2 days out. Didn't talk any NFL draft on today's show. Can you guys believe it? Well, that'll all change tomorrow when Andrew and I will get into the draft once again, getting close to finally figuring out what the Vikings are going to do. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Back at it again tomorrow.